the papers out on the registration desk that announce a record sale. We have some non-Italian instrumental sets and singles and opera sets, which we're going to sell to the highest bid, not during this meeting, but there's an instruction sheet attached, which tells you what to do about that if you want to make an offer for these. And also, we hope to see you this afternoon, late afternoon, at the DeBellis Collection for sort of a wine tasting of Italian wines and some food to go with it, and lots of hospitality, Etruscan vases, and we hope that that will launch you into the great time you're going to have on this campus and in this city. We have official greetings from the university this morning in the form of Dr. August Coppola, our recently arrived Dean of Creative Arts. Dr. Coppola is a PhD in comparative literature and was on the faculty at Long Beach campus of California State University, and then he was also on CSU Board of Trustees. Now he has come to us as of 1984 and is full of creative ideas for the Creative Arts Department, or rather the School of Creative Arts, among which he has launched some new curricula in the form of Art of the Decades. We're very pleased to have Dr. Coppola on the campus, and he would like to say a few words of welcome to you now. Dr. August Coppola.
Thank you, Serena. I naturally, on behalf of the university, want to welcome you here, and I'm very pleased that this society exists for two reasons. I thought perhaps I should have made a recording this morning and done the welcoming address by disc, not only because of the appropriateness, but because of the early hour for me. I'm a late person. One of the things I think that's very important about the School of Creative Arts is that the emphasis is on the word creative, and that we're always searching for new forms, a new kind of vitality in all of the arts. We have 8 departments in the school. But I think when you believe about creativity in words like innovation and experimentation, you cannot separate that from the traditional aspects of a discipline. Without any background, without any discipline, without any technique, it's impossible to come up with a meaningful new direction. And I think probably one of the most important, at least in my heart, is what you have all committed yourselves to, the recording of music, restoration of music, because without that, it's very difficult to get an insight into what takes place in the future. And apropos of that, it just so happened that I have been influenced in many ways by what you have been doing. One, I've been studying Pagliacci again and again and again, trying to get some feeling of the significance of the work, particularly for today with the play within a play. And not too long ago, I came across this record, which I'll give to Serena in case those of you who want to either hear it or look at it. It's based on a 1907-78 recording at the Yale Library. And for me, in being able to listen to that, I got a new sense of what Leoncavallo had meant by verismo. So without that, I could not have done the work that I'm doing today. Someone took the time to do that, to transfer it to tape and ultimately to disc, which I was able to purchase. 2 other recordings were very significant in my particular work in my life. One was a recording before I arrived here. I had heard a recording of Mada Robin singing various recitals, and she did the mad scene from Lucia, in which she really goes up to her range, which is enormous. I think it was high C above high C, and I was totally impressed with that, even more so because when I was a little boy, I used to go with my father, and he was the flautist for Lily Pons. And when I heard Mada Robin, I thought this was absolutely incredible, although it was a little bit acrobatic. It still was a wonderful quality that was preserved only by disc, and when I came here, very few people knew that her debut was in San Francisco, I believe in 56. So again, the archive did something that gave me a sense of what it means to be in the city creatively. The third recording was again very significant. I was studying for, my field is not music, I'm a writer, but I tend to do my writing through music because of the nature of my family. It was a recording of the Concerto in G by Ravel. And I went through 9 recordings of this, never quite understanding how the hell the middle section worked, which is the adagio. And Ravel had said it was the most difficult thing he ever wrote because it was so slow and so simple. And I listened and listened to one artist after another play this, and it never made sense to me because it's so long that if the attack or the phrasing is not made accurately in the beginning, you can't build a bridge over that length of time. So I felt that this thing didn't work, and I didn't know why. And finally, I found a recording in which actually Ravel was conducting and Marguerite Long was playing the piano, and he had written it for her. When I heard that and her phrasing, the whole thing worked, and I understood exactly what he was doing. So again, it seems to me that what you're consecrated to is not simply a preservation in the sense of the technical, but is equally an aesthetic presentation so that the future becomes more meaningful by what you record that is heard, and more importantly in the arts, what you record that is not heard, but is the phrasing and the spirit that moves the work. And so with that in mind, and my own interest in your work, I want to welcome you here, and I hope that you have an extremely fine time, and that, more importantly, that you record each other in terms of impressions that will register on the discs in your work in the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dean Culver. We really appreciate it. For any of you I haven't yet had the pleasure of meeting, and I don't think there's anybody here, I'm Barbara Sacca from Stanford University, your co-host. We'll be taking you down there on Saturday, and I hope most of you will be joining us for that. I'm also in charge of local arrangements, and we've tried to get everything shipshape as best we could. I apologize for the weather this morning, and we couldn't do anything about that. I think most of you have your packets and registrations. If there are any questions, please see me either between the meetings or whenever it's convenient for you. I just want to do a little bit of housekeeping at this point. First of all, we've been asked not to bring coffee or food into the hall, so I would appreciate it very much if you would respect the wishes of the Creative Arts Department. Also, I've had some questions about the mystery dots on your badge. The red dots mean you are taking the bus to Stanford on Saturday. So if you have signed up for the bus, you should have a red dot on your badge. The green dot means you are going to the banquet on Saturday night, and multiple dots mean you may be bringing a spouse or other members of your family or friends. But that's what the dots mean, and that's all there is to it. The bus is already oversubscribed, so I'm sorry to say that if there are people who were hoping to get on it, unfortunately we have no more room. We do, however, have local people who will be driving, so if there's somebody who really wants to go and doesn't have a way, please see me sometime during the meeting and we'll try to work it out for you. There are a very few places left for the banquet, very few. So again, if anybody is interested, the banquet is $20 and I need to see you in the next day or so. Well, certainly actually by late this afternoon, if you can manage it. Other than that, I really don't have any other special information for you other than we will be here at your service. Please let me know if there's anything you need. I'll be around all the time, so just anytime you have questions, let me know and we'll try to work things out for you, whatever comes up. We're glad to have you. It's been a couple of weeks where I vacillated between no-dos and sleepies, but you're here, and it's just great. We're really excited. So I think we're going to have a great meeting, and rather than delay us any longer, we might actually get started early, and that will help the cause along. Thank you.
Actually, I had a feeling that this would happen, and normally we would say, well, we'll take a break for a couple minutes and we'll come back and hear the talk, but no, we will get right along so that we can keep ourselves on schedule. This morning's speaker is one of the, does something that's important, an important aspect of Ars that usually is not really a part of what most of us do. Most of us listen to records, talk about records, write about records. This guy actually makes records. In other words, he's making more things for us to listen to that we don't already have time to listen to what we already have, but he also is a writer. He's published several important books. Recorded Ragtime is a book which is very important and near and dear to those who are interested in the early history of recorded jazz, because the dates go back to 1897, not just 1917. Rags and Ragtimes is another book that he has authored. And so without further ado, we are going to start our first day in San Francisco with a day with most of the talks dealing with San Francisco. And Dave Jason's topic is San Francisco's Golden Age of Recorded Ragtime and Dixieland Jazz. Dave Jason.
That'll be fine.
Okay, fine. Just heads and
tails. Is this a half track? Or a quarter track?
It could be either.
What's your half track?
F track it is. 7.5?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is it cue to the leader?
No.
Ta-da!
Thank you. All right, where did I stop?
What?
Okay, fine.
Yeah, no, yeah.
Got it, thank you. Good morning. What a pleasure it is to be here in San Francisco. Actually, when Mike asked me for this topic, it struck me as carrying coals to Newcastle, especially with Phil Elwood on the program later this afternoon. He was not only here, he did it all. But for some of those of you who might not know of the sounds, I have the tape. I'd like you to hear the sounds of San Francisco ragtime and Dixieland jazz. So my talk is going to be mostly listening. When one thinks of the golden age of anything, it usually comes shortly after its beginning, when the initial impact is greatest and inspiration flows freely. Ragtime started in 1897, both in print and on disc. The first Dixieland jazz was found on discs 20 years later in 1917. It is therefore surprising that when one talks of San Francisco's golden age of recorded ragtime and Dixieland jazz, one is not talking about either the turn of the century or of the 20s, but from the decade starting in 1941. Perhaps some local collector knows of commercially issued ragtime or Dixieland recordings made here before 1927, but I don't. By the time recordings were made here, it was time for the swing era and the big bands. However, starting in mid-December 1941, Lou Waters and his nine-piece Yerba Buena Jazz Band made their first recordings here of both ragtime and Dixieland jazz. These recordings were to have such an impact on both scenes that not only did they start a ragtime revival, as well as a Dixieland revival around the world, but in this country, 90% of what was to be euphemistically called traditional jazz bands imitated the Waters sound for the next 30 years. Celebrating both revivals in one recording, let us hear the Yerba Buena Jazz Band recording of December 19th, 1941, performing Scott Joplin's classic Maple Leaf Rag. Thank you. This was the sound which was to become world famous in just a few years. When the discs reached the East Coast, fanzines such as The Record Changer dismissed this revolutionary group by merely noting that it had two cornets and likened them to King Oliver's Creole Jazz Band, and a poor imitation at that. As you heard, the Waters group sounded nothing like Oliver's band, but because they didn't sound remotely like Eddie Condon's gang, which is what those in the East associated with Dixieland jazz, acceptance by the East Coast critics and fans came late and grudgingly. It was only when Turk Murphy played at New York's Childs Paramount in 1954 and at Basin Street East that the San Francisco sound was heard in person, giving the East Coast jazz lover a chance to hear this original conception for what it was. It is interesting to note that the ragtime revival, which started at the same time, was initiated not by a pianist, as one would expect, ragtime being piano music, but by trombonist Turk Murphy of the Yerba Buena Band. In addition to collecting jazz records, Turk also collected ragtime sheet music and thought that these old rags would make a nice change from the band sounds during intermission. So Turk introduced band pianist Wally Rose to ragtime. Among the first eight tunes recorded by the Yerba Buena on their first session in December 1941, Wally, backed by the rhythm section, made his first ragtime recording. It was George Botsford's million-selling black and white rag of 1908, and it is this disc which paid for the entire session and convinced the group to continue their ragtime feature. This recording, in effect, started the ragtime revival. An interest in its compositions, composers, and performers which is still very much going on today. While he could be considered the first in the second generation of ragtime performers and a considerable influence on the third generation. While Wally's personal influence is largely maintained in the San Francisco area, especially among its pianists, his highly developed musical taste in ragtime has dominated the choice of repertoire for at least two succeeding generations of ragtime pianists so far, through the rags he has chosen to record, giving them widespread popularity and thereby encouraging other pianists to perform them. Wally's taste in rags spans the entire spectrum from folk to novelty. His approach, however, is always within the confines of his own musical personality. His playing, therefore, is unique and immediately identifiable. Wally was born on October 2, 1913, in Oakland, California, and except for a brief 5 years when the family lived in Honolulu, he spent his formative years in Oakland. When he was 9 years old, he started taking classical piano lessons, which continued for the next 14 years. At the same time, he was captivated by the family player piano and the current pop tunes as arranged on the rolls. During his high school summer months, he started what was to become a way of life for the next 10 years, working as a pianist on board liners for pleasure cruises. From the start of Lou Waters' Yerba Buena Jazz Band in 1941 until its demise nearly a decade later, Wally was its sole pianist. Thanks to both Lou and Turk's interest in ragtime, Wally began to be featured in spots devoted to his ragtime piano, backed by the strong Yerba Buena rhythm section, both on the job and on recordings, as we just heard. As a result of this activity, he rediscovered and recorded for the first time some of what are now accepted as classics in the genre. For example, let us listen to Wally's solo recording of the New Orleans ragtime composer Irwin LeClaire's Triangle Jazz Blues. With Wally's nationwide success on record and local success with the band, other pianists quickly came out of the ragtime closet to appear in the Bay Area and to record. One was Montana transplant, Bert Bales, who landed here in 1938 and has been a Bay Area mainstay ever since. Bert has played both in bands and as a soloist. We hear him doing a most swinging version of Joplin's Maple Leaf Rag. Was born in Denver, Colorado in 1902, but coming to San Francisco in time for the 1915 fair, first heard the sounds of ragtime as purveyed by New Yorker Mike Bernard, San Franciscan Jay Roberts, composer of the Entertainer's Rag, and New Orleanian Jelly Roll Morton. From then on, Paul studied and played ragtime. At home, mostly in clubs where informality was the keynote, Paul musically expanded and was at his ease. We now hear his relaxed and swinging tribute to the Barbary Coast, his original Dance of the Witch Hazels. Thank you. After the Second World War, the Yerba Buena Jazz Band reassembled and settled down into an eight-piece band with Lou Waters and Bob Scobie on trumpets, Turk Murphy on trombone, Bob Helm on clarinet, Wally Rose on piano, Harry Mordecai on banjo, Dick Lammy on tuba, and Bill Dart on drums. In a series of recordings made in 1946 and issued on LP in 1954 by Good Time Jazz, we hear a Turk Murphy original celebrating their return to civilian life at the Dawn Club on Annie Street. The tune is entitled Minstrels of Annie Street, as performed by Lou Waters and his Yerba Buena Jazz Band.
Ha ha ha.
When Lou gave up the band in 1950, Turk formed his own group. It consisted of Bob Scobie on trumpet, Turk on trombone, Bill Napier on clarinet, Bert Bales on piano, Bill Newman on banjo, Squire Gersbach on tuba, and Stan Ward on drums. Recording in January 1950, Kerry Mills' Ragtime Dance. One of Turk's loves was the music of Jelly Roll Morton. In 1953, for Columbia Records, he recorded an entire album devoted to Jelly's music. Using Bob Short on both trumpet and tuba, Bob Helm on clarinet, Wally on piano, and Dick Lammy on banjo, they played Jelly's lovely Frog Eye Moore Rag. Thank you. Imagine having that in your backyard. Struttin' with Some Barbecue was done in 1961 with Ernie Carson on cornet, Pete Clute now permanently on piano, a protege of Wally's who was with Turk until 2 years ago, Bob Short on tuba, and Frankie Capp on drums. 1961 Turk Murphy. Just when everyone gave Lou Waters up for good, his perversity and the idiocy of the PG&E in trying to build an atomic power plant on the San Andreas Fault put Lou right back in the recording studio with a seven-piece group and vocalist Barbara Dane. The seven were Lou, Bob Mielke on trombone, Wally Rose on piano, Bob Helm on clarinet, Bob Short on tuba, Monty Ballou on banjo, and Thad Vanden on drums. Proving that 14 years without playing doesn't mean a thing, and that Lou still had plenty to say musically, they recorded a marvelous and appropriate song, Jesse Fuller's San Francisco Bay.
By the San Francisco Bay. Yeah, he took an ocean liner, went so far away. I didn't mean to treat him so bad. He was the best friend I ever had. When he said goodbye, he made me cry. I wanna lay right down and die. Well, I ain't got a nickel, I ain't got a loud to dime. And if you don't come back, I think I will lose my mind. If you ever come back to stay, gonna spend another brand new day just walking with my daddy by the San Francisco Bay. Through my back door, wondering which way to go. That man I'm so crazy about, he don't want me no more. Well, I think I'll grab a freight train just because I'm feeling blue. And I will ride all the way to the end of the line, thinking only of you. Meanwhile, in another city, I'm just about to go insane. Well, I thought I heard my daddy's voice, the way he used to call my name. Now, if you ever come back to stay, I'm gonna spend another brand new day just sailing with my daddy by the San Francisco Bay. Yeah, I got the blues when my daddy left me by the San Francisco Bay. And I took an ocean liner, went so far away. I didn't mean to treat him so bad. He was the best friend I ever had. When he said goodbye, you know he made me cry. I wanna lay right down and die. Ain't got a nickel and I ain't got a lousy dime. And if you don't come back, I think I'm gonna lose my mind. Well, if you ever come back to stay, gonna spend another brand new day just a-walking with my baby by the San Francisco Bay. Yeah, if you ever come back to stay, spend another brand new day just a-walking with my daddy by the San Francisco Bay.
It has been my privilege to have played in festivals with Turk Murphy and his jazz band for the past 20 years. From a festival performance, I'd like you to hear Turk with one of my favorite of his bands, the 1973 band consisting of Leon Oakley on cornet, Bob Helm on clarinet, Pete Clute on piano, Carl Lunsford on banjo, and Bill Carroll on tuba, appropriately enough with a Lou Waters original Big Bear Stomp.
Thank you.
As you can hear, San Francisco's golden age of recorded ragtime and Dixieland jazz came, stayed, and is still here. Countless jazz bands today can still be heard making the sounds Lou Waters and Turk Murphy created over 45 years ago, thanks to many people such as Lester Koenig, Dave Stewart, and Phil Elwood, who recorded, broadcast, and wrote about the San Francisco sounds of ragtime and Dixieland jazz, as well as the dedicated musicians themselves. We continue to find plenty of recordings devoted to this area's continuous twin revivals. 35 years after forming his own band, Turk Murphy is still performing his distinctive brand of San Francisco Dixieland jazz, now at the Fairmont Hotel. I'm going there tonight. Won't you join me?
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, while we rewind tapes and we get set up here, I have just one little announcement I would like to make. As many of you do know, we have a program of putting abstracts, précis, summaries of our convention talks in the bulletin, which comes out once a year. And it is my responsibility to find people to do these abstracts. Now, I have already contacted a few people on this, but I want to be fair about it. I want to be able to have people writing these things more than just the people that I know, because literally half of the people at the convention this year I'm not personally acquainted with yet. And I'm not sure of what your interests are and expertise is in the different areas, classical, popular, jazz, spoken word, cataloging, archive considerations. So if you have, if you see a particular talk that you would like to write, 2, 3, 4 paragraphs on as a summary to let those who are unfortunately not able to come here to the convention know what the talk was about, and possibly be interested enough in it to want to buy the tape that will be available later in the year of all of the convention talks of the people who will allow us to record. If there is a talk that you would like to do an abstract on, please let me know. Now, some of them I've already parceled out, so we might not be able to give you your first choice, but I really would appreciate it. And I have a few people I have gotten information about that I will be asking, if I'm not able to get some other people volunteering on this. Okay, well, we'll just pause for a few moments while we...